Hey, are you ready to create reliable revenue and master every detail of your hosting business? If you want to avoid compromising all those hospitality details that you love, but still approach hosting like the business it is, we created a free class just for you. Set aside 45 minutes. We promise it's worth your time. And go watch our value-packed workshop where we go over how to master every detail of your hosting business with our foolproof hosting business mastery method that will help you avoid hosting burnout. Growing, where simply starting your hosting business isn't always easy, but it can be simple. We'll help you avoid the three big mistakes that are keeping you stuck, tired, and overwhelmed as a short-term rental host so that you have a powerful revenue stream you can actually rely on.
If you're ready to take your hosting to the next level, head on over to thanksforvisiting.me/workshop to watch this on-demand training. Or send us a DM on Instagram with the word workshop. We'll send you the link and most likely a video DM. We love those. Again, that's thanksforvisiting.me/workshop.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every successful short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, this dynamic duo has welcomed more than 2,000 guests from 25 countries, earning them over $500,000 and garnering them over 650 five-star reviews. Now they're ready to share creative ways for your listing to stand out, to serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry, or Annette and Sarah will share stories about their own experiences so you can implement actionable improvements to your own rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Here are your hosts, Annette and Sarah.
Hey, hey, listeners, welcome back to another great week. I am Sarah Karakayan.
I am Annette Grant, and together we are...
Thanks for visiting. All right, we're going to get this episode started like we do each and every week, and that's sharing one of you, our amazing listeners, who are using our hashtag on the IG on Instagram. It's hashtag STR Share Sunday. STR, of course, stands for short-term rental. Why Sunday? Because on Sundays, we share you on our Instagram channel, but also here... on the Thanks for Visiting podcast. So Annette, who are we sharing this week?
Today we are sharing at the Hideaway Torquay, but please pay attention. It's the underscore Hideaway underscore Torquay. TORQUAY. I hope everybody got that because you're going to want to get to their Instagram stat.
We're hoping it's pronouncing that right too. We truly don't know, but we're going loud and wrong. Wrong and strong.
Yes. And I believe my geography, it's Torquay, Victoria, which I think is in Australia. And of course, the map isn't working right now, but it's okay. Just go with us. This is what I want to share about this property, though. I have not, in all of my time doing the STR shares, been totally swept away by a porch. And they give a lot of highlights to this porch. It is amazing. They actually have, and I want you to go to it and check it out. I actually went to an Airbnb. I was staying on top. It was at the primary residence. They have the window in the kitchen where it turns into a bar outside.
Ooh.
But you look inside.
That's good.
And it's an interior-exterior window. So I love that you feel like you're sitting at the bar, but the people are on the inside at the sink and you're on the exterior. But this porch, please... go take notes. They have extended their living area to this porch. I mean, you just want to hang out there. There's like four or five different areas on the porch alone that you could drink coffee, you could read a book, you could relax, you can sit at their bar. I just want people to take a look. They have an outdoor shower. Just look at what they've done. A fire pit, this outdoor space.
They've engaged every square inch of their backyard.
And what I love is it's the exterior. So many times when we're doing our STR shares, we're just like, oh, look at this bedroom and look at this living room. And they're really taking this, their entire property and being able to invite the guest they're not even inviting them in. They're inviting them outdoors. So cheers to them. This is amazing. I mean, I really want to go hang out here right now outside in all of the areas, especially at the bar in the window. So take some design tips from the Hideaway Torquay. Thank you for using our hashtag, and we're going to have to put you on our wish list here soon.
Amazing.
All right, Sarah, I'm excited for this interview today.
Yeah, I keep saying this. This show, it's going to be such an interesting... Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about so many things short-term rental, but it's almost like the acquisition side of buying or selling your portfolio in so many words, plus so much more. I mean, Annette and I admitted to our guests, we're like, we know nothing about this, so this is going to be the most authentic show ever.
We went to lunch and obviously we asked him some questions, but
we saved all the good stuff for you guys.
We were like, wait, we're just going to have you on the show.
Yes. So welcome Jacoby, who has been involved in short-term vacation rentals, litigation consulting, food and beverage, and real estate for over a decade. Jacoby is one of the preeminent M&A consultants in the short-term rental industry. He specifically advises buy-side clients looking to expand into new markets through acquisitions and developer partnerships. He has worked as a subject matter expert on the BP oil spill, very fancy, along with several other cases. A former restaurateur, he is currently a licensed RSPS realtor in Tennessee. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Where do we start?
Well, I know this show is about you, Jacoby, but I want to go back because your family has history in the vacation rental world. And I want our listeners to understand how far back
in your blood.
Yeah. That a lot of times generationally, like when we talk to hosts, it's their first time hosting. It's their first venture with maybe even real estate and then maybe long-term then short-term. So I think maybe one of the only ones we know with a huge backstory and a long history in the vacation rental. So can you tell us how you got started and how your family got started?
Sure. So I'm one of the weird ones that was actually born and raised in the short-term vacation rental industry in the 80s and 90s. Well before there was Vrbo or Airbnb or all these cool new business models and niches.
The internet. The internet to book internet, online.
That was just being created. Yeah. So my father worked for one of the largest private vacation rental companies back then down in the Florida area. Vacation short-term rentals have been around for a long, long time, especially in the resort and leisure markets, the beach, the ski, the mountain markets. But they really didn't get the exposure necessary until kind of the first VRBO, Vrbo, and then especially since Airbnb since 2008. But I grew up with my brothers, and we would take the trashes out of the units and wash the sheets in the linens, and had no idea what our parents did, what our dad did. We thought he was part of the hotel industry or the timeshare industry, didn't have a clue. So went through all of that. He actually worked his way up. There was a public company called Resort Quest, which was kind of the Vacasa 1.0 of the 90s, that was the largest vacation short-term rental management company. And he worked there, and then that got sold off in many parcels to a lot of different hotel companies. So there's always been a hotel versus short-term vacation rental fight, but little do a lot of people know is that a lot of the large hotel chains actually had short-term rental portfolios over the years, which is a little interesting. But yeah, grew up doing all of that. I left the industry for about a decade, and opened up a restaurant in Nashville, Tennessee. Met my wife there, which was awesome. But loved the industry too much. Got pulled back in. I have joined my father in C2G Advisors back in 2017. And I have two other brothers in the industry that work as well. And then I have a younger sister that actually stayed out of the industry and does social work. So she's a smart one of the group, I guess.
Wow. Okay. So first of all, what got you into the food and beverage pathway? What is it, just like you grew up kind of in the hospitality industry and it was something that interested you? But I know it's kind of off the course here, but it's so interesting to know how you got into F&B.
Yeah. And my father always told us when we were kids, like, the only industry to stay out of is food and beverage.
Okay.
And my middle brother and I, graduating college, both went into food and beverage. We had done that all the way through high school and college to help pay the bills and stuff of that nature. It was actually funny. My brother's girlfriend at the time, her father owned kind of a bar and grill. And we had the inside scoop, I guess, from him that he was looking at selling it. So we came in, and my brother's a chef. And yeah, so kind of made that leap and did that for quite some time. It was fun. We learned a lot. It's a good time.
Do you purchase that restaurant?
You owned it? We did.
Was that your first time purchasing a business?
Yes. Yes, that was. It was, We had to grow up quick. We were pretty young at that time too. We made every mistake you could think of.
But now you're behind the scenes looking at a lot of businesses every day.
And helping people do that very thing on a much larger scale, but you're helping businesses acquire other businesses. Is that correct? Is that the simplest form of understanding what it is you do on a daily basis?
Yes. Yeah. Basically, we partner with property management companies across the country, whether they're in urban areas or resort and leisure areas. And we help them grow through acquisitions. And some of them are looking at acquiring other management companies in their same market. And then some are looking at acquiring into expanding into other markets. And we help them find companies that would look to potentially sell, whether that's 20 units or 200 units. And then we kind of hold their hand throughout the process.
Why would a company want to sell their portfolio? Is it always like they're ready to retire, or like what are some other reasons you're seeing? We shared with Jacoby listeners before we pressed record that a lot of our listeners, a lot of you are single property operators. You've not yet started. Maybe you're co-hosting 5 to 10, or maybe you own 5 to 10. I'm sure there's listeners out there too who have larger operations. But we thought this would be really cool and interesting as you're starting your career in the short-term rental, vacation rental industry to see just what's possible for you.
That there can be an exit.
There can be an exit.
That's what's sexy about Silicon Valley or anything like that. Is like, oh, I'm going to like exit. I'm going to make all this money.
Well, but we don't think about it.
And right, you should kind of always have the exit in mind. And we talk to a ton of people every day and it's like, wait a second, you're building something that has a huge value. And we were fascinated when we met up with Jacoby for lunch. We're like, wait, we actually didn't even know it existed in the vacation rental, short-term rental world. So we're hoping that we're going to be opening your eyes to potential if you're wanting to grow either your personal portfolio or start to, manage for others. So talk us, what Sarah said, like, why are people coming to you? What's their
why are people selling? Yeah, tell
why
us.
Are people acquiring? Yeah,
and I think there needs to be a distinction made between, and this is what's fantastic about the industry and Airbnb's role of bringing the exposure on the industry, is there are so many new entrepreneurs and investors in our industry. So there's so many cool business models and niches, and there's so many. There's a lot of slices to the pie right now, and where I want to make a distinction. So to the listeners and for whoever, there are people that own their assets. So let's say they own 5 homes and they manage their own homes. And there's the ones that don't own any of the assets, any of the homes. They just manage third-party homes. So the ones that own a portfolio of their homes, if they own 5, 10, 15, 20, that is even younger than the ones that manage third-party homes, that part. So there isn't a lot of comps on how those trade yet. I think that will be super interesting how they will start trading on either cap rates, or you can sell kind of the operations part and still retain the real estate part. And sorry if I get very
boring. No, you keep giving it, and then we're going to have you unpack it. It's fine.
But so that... we're in the early innings there. There are institutional funds that are, I think an article was released the other day, and then we're talking to others in the early stages, and their institutional funds are looking at coming in and buying 5, 10, 15, 20, 100 actual assets, 100 homes in these different markets. And that is who would be the buyer if you own 3, 5, 10, 15 homes. And they would likely buy that on caps based on whatever the market comps are, whatever for how like a long-term rental cap would trade on or a hotel cap would trade on. So that's super interesting. And I'm very excited to see how that continues. As for if you manage third-party homes, other investors or second homes for other people, that has been around a lot longer where those have traded and people have sold and bought of those companies. And the reasons people sell, I mean, it's a lot of it is the normal stuff. There's a retirement. Right now is interesting because the short-term vacation rental industry is super sexy right now. Most markets are coming back with a vengeance from COVID, and knock on wood, we don't go back under for any reason. And there's also a distinction there that like the traditional resort and leisure markets actually did better than the urban markets for various reasons. But a lot of these operators had the best trailing 12 months of their lives, of their company's lifetime right now. So they're like, let's sell while the getting's good, because we're gonna get multiple of this profit from a buyer. And so that's one thing. A lot of these companies actually had their best 12 months on their financials. And then secondly is the potential cap gains increase that we're seeing, that and it's political, but there's a potential for the long-term capital gains to increase in 2022 for, I believe, over $1 million if you sell your business. I think it's going to go from somewhere like 20% to 40%, but don't quote me on that. And so some of these companies are wanting to sell prior to 2022. So we're seeing more buyers in the industry than ever before. Several of these companies are doing better than they've ever done. And they want to potentially not get taxed double the amount that they would if they sold in 2022 or after. So that's kind of what we're seeing. There's more M&A activity this year than I've ever seen before in 2021. So, and probably a lot of them got pretty worn out from some of the stuff that happened in 2020, if I did guess.
No, yeah. that's a great point. Is like, not only do they have high revenue, but they've been through a lot in the last year and are ready to cash in the chips, if you will.
Can we take it just real estate 101 really quick? And can you explain cap rates and capital gains to our listeners?
Sure. And cap rates, I might butcher it, so I apologize. But I'll take capital gains first.
Yeah.
So that will be if you sell a company, it's taxed at a different rate than ordinary income tax. So if you, in the stock market, I believe if you hold a stock longer than 1 year, then you're taxed at capital gains rates. And I think the highest rate that can be is, I believe, 20%. If you sell a house between 1 and 2 years of owning it, your primary residence, you'll be taxed at capital gains. And then if you sell a business, it's typically taxed as a capital gains event instead of on your ordinary income tax. The cap rate I'll probably have to Google it if I'm being honest.
It's okay. I Googled it because this is the thing that always threw me off. But it's the rate of return on a real estate investment property based on the income that the property is expected to generate. And all I know is that when I started buying homes in a certain area, that I want to be in a cap rate of, 7%, right? Like that's what the property is. We're hoping it generates, that income.
Yeah, exactly. I think is it the net operating income without the actual debt divided by the total purchase price? And I think that will give you a percentage.
Yeah. And it's kind of like this like guideline, right? Of if it's a healthy business. But I've also had so many people too, like there's so many other things to consider when buying real estate or, a business that you can't really see on paper either. So it's like that it's the math and the I guess the brand, like that thing that you can't, you know, really
intangible.
Yeah, the intangible. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Jacoby, your day to day, you are my understanding is you're the for lack of a better term, the middleman between the larger institutions that want to purchase the management companies, like a brokering the deals. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it's not always, and the large players do the PR pieces and stuff of that nature. It's not always, everyone isn't a gigantic $100 million deal or something crazy of that nature. There's also local operators in whatever market. What market are you all in?
Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, so there's also some of the maybe the larger operators in Columbus. They might not be large national players, but they want to acquire a competitor or a smaller business either in Columbus, or they would love to go to another market that maybe within 2 or 4 hours, and they want to kind of buy a 10 to 20 unit company so they can put a flag down and then try to grow from there. So it runs the gamut of like venture backed, fast running towards IPO type of companies to private equity groups, family offices, all the way to just small to medium regional market players.
Interesting. So let's say I'm like, I want to go to Gatlinburg. I want to start with a vengeance. I want to have like 25 properties. Would you be someone that could, and I just want to be an operator. I'm not going to buy 25 properties. Could, if it was an individual, could they reach out to you and have you find an operator in Gatlinburg that would be willing to sell their property management / we call it hosting business? Is that something? Yeah, that's more of a short term rental term. Airbnb. That's an Airbnb term. Is that something that you and your company do?
That is exactly what we do. Yes. Okay. So what we would meet with you or whomever, and we would kind of create the criteria, create the parameters. Say, hey, what are some markets that interest you? What is a minimum unit count or maximum unit count? What is how capitalized are you? Kind of what is your budget for an acquisition? Knowing that, and we don't have to get into this, but whatever, if you guys want to or not, but knowing that the purchase price is one part of it, but the structure and the terms of the deal is honestly sometimes more important. So sometimes, usually between 50 and 75% of the purchase price will be cash at closing. And then like 25 to 50% of the purchase price will be a seller note. And there can be contingencies and earnouts and clawbacks and all that fun stuff on them. So
a clawback. Yeah, it sounds like I'm going to claw my way back into this business. Let me back in. Here's the deal. Listeners, honestly, before we went to lunch with Jacoby, we had no idea that this even existed.
No.
So we really hope that you are going, wait a second.
Bigger.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, think bigger. And it's one of those things that, man, Sarah, people come to Sarah and I every single day and want us to host their properties, and we tell them no, and we're trying to figure out the way to tell them no, but yes, so we can like sell the leads almost in a way. It's like, but I just think that it's interesting because everyone wants to know, like, how do you get started? But this is one of those things that I know this happens a lot in the franchising world, is people are sitting on cash and they know what kind of business they want to get into, and they don't maybe know exactly how to. So they find these alternative, I would call this an alternative method of getting into a business that I'm interested in because I have the cash to do it. And that might not be necessarily the buyers that you always work with, but I think it's just good for our listeners to understand that there are so many different ways to get started and then also to exit out of something. So I think that's encouraging for our listeners that are like, everybody wants me to host their property. Do I start a property management company? And they are like, well, what do I do then? So I think this is cool that they know that there's potential there. Can you talk about if someone has a management company and they've got 20 properties, 30 properties,
100 properties,
what is something, and maybe it's even their personal portfolio. Can you tell us what as either the investor or the host or the property manager, what should we be doing today that would set us up for a successful exit, whether it is with you or any company? What are some steps we can be taking right now?
Yeah, sure. And going back to what you were saying, there's actually like three or four different franchisors and licensors in the vacation rental industry, short-term rental industry as well, which is pretty interesting.
Huh.
Okay, so yeah, there's definitely things that a seller can focus on today, whether they're looking to sell in the next 6 months or 6 years. Some of it won't be as needed if they actually own the assets compared to if they're managing third parties. And then some of it is just some administrative work, cleaning some things up in the back end. But I guess first I can talk about growth is huge. And I know that it sounds like common sense, but the way to get the highest price and the best terms is to work on growth. And that is two ways. So that's unit growth and revenue growth per unit. So unit growth wise, and I know you were saying that y'all are getting leads flying into you, which is fantastic. You should probably partner up with the management company and get a referral fee on those.
We're working on that.
Because that's fantastic. That's the gold right there. I think in terms of unit growth, a buyer is going to want to buy a company that is ascending. They're not going to want to buy a company that's flatlined or descending in terms of unit count. And I fully understand that every management company, they have their own specific inventory that they like, whether it's three bedrooms and up or luxury or one bedroom condos or something of that nature. So yes, you want to be strategic about growth, but you want to always be trying to grow. And the best way to do that is have a dedicated business development employee. And that can be you as well. If you're the owner and you love sourcing and speaking with potential new homeowners, but it needs to be a full-time job. And it doesn't need to be something that you're the GM, you're the head of logistics, and you do revenue management and marketing, and you also do biz dev. obviously, the owner does have to wear a lot of hats for a smaller business, but you only have a finite amount of time and bandwidth in a day. And it deserves more necessary attention than somebody that's wearing a lot of hats. So that's something I would focus on doing immediately. Get a biz dev person in, start working on some good systems and processes to onboard new homeowners. Another thing for growth is bringing on inventory is great, but optimizing that inventory is the best thing you want to try to do after that. Buyers are going to want to see reservation level detail per home over the last 3 years and even looking forward. So they're going to want to see how are these homes individually doing compared to last year, compared to this next year, all that good stuff. So if you are an owner and you're setting your rates four times a year, you are leaving a lot of money on the table. That is not good. you need to be dynamically pricing your rates. I am not a revenue management expert, but either doing it in-house by once again having a dedicated revenue management role or a team of them, or there are fantastic outsourced software vendors that focus solely on revenue management and dynamic pricing. So that's another thing you will need to work on and focus on. And once again, if you're the owner and you're doing biz dev and revenue management and operations, that's not going to be a good recipe for your future. You want to invest in that future. Another part that's super important and might sound very boring and is the minutia of the management contracts. And I apologize for the people that own the assets because this doesn't really matter for you as much. But if you manage a portfolio of say 25 homes or condos, and they're all third-party homeowners, the actual assets that you're going to sell to an end buyer are going to be these management contracts. And homeowners can be very fickle. A lot of times these management contracts are easily cancelable or terminated. Mm-hmm. So this is a large part of what a buyer is going to be researching and looking at every management contract. Most owners, I realize, have anywhere between 10 or more different versions of their management contracts with the homeowners over a 15-year period or whatnot. We even have talked with owners that have handshake agreements with some of their homeowners, and hey, that's awesome. However, a buyer is not going to count that as a unit that they're buying. So focusing on standardizing and making a uniform set of management contracts is what is the kind of the way to go right now. I would focus on that right now. And obviously, homeowners will negotiate sometimes their commission rate and stuff of that nature, maybe some of the ancillary fees. But the guts of the management contracts need to all be uniform. There are two important clauses in the management contracts that need to be in every single one. First is the auto-renew clause. These contracts typically are between 1 and 3 years, maybe a little bit longer, and they need to auto-renew at the end of that term. If they don't have that, then you'll have to obviously get the homeowners to either give you written consent that they want to re-up or whatnot. And buyers will put contingencies on the purchase price that these homeowners will need to kind of re-up their contracts prior to buying. So if you want to reduce the amount of potential contingencies, then have an auto-renew clause. The next one and more important one is the assignability clause. There are two ways that this can be good. First is if it actually says this contract can be assigned without the written prior consent of the other party. So that's a good thing. Or if it's silent to assignability. We'll see about half the management contracts don't even mention it at all. And I am not an attorney, but in most states that we've transacted deals, that is treated as assignable. So if the contract is able to be assigned without the prior written consent of the other party or silent to assignability are good. If the contract says this contract cannot be assigned without the prior written consent of the other party, that is going to complicate the deal and it's going to make it more complex. Most buyers are risk averse. And which is fair because these contracts are the assets. And most buyers buy companies as an asset purchase. And in order to do that, the contracts will need to be assigned into the new company that they create. So you won't be able to legally do that if they say they're not assignable. There are a couple steps that you can do to kind of fix that. First is, prior, if it says they're not assignable, then go to your homeowners and while you're updating all your contracts and making them uniform, either take that clause out or change the wording. You change a lot of things in the contract, and you can walk with it through them. You don't have to do like a smoke and mirrors type of thing, but that is something you'll want to change. If you don't do that, then buyers will likely put contingencies saying that the new homeowners have to sign, or the homeowners have to sign new contracts with the buyers, and they will not pay for contracts that don't sign. And typically, anywhere between 10 and 30% of the homeowners won't do that. So if it's 30 units, then 3 to 9 of them won't come over. And if that's contracts go for $20,000 a contract or something, I mean, that can add up quite a bit.
So I have so many questions. So what if...
Yeah, sorry. That was a long monologue.
No, it was good. And the whole time I was just like, okay. But I kind of want to really quickly look at this from the other side. Because if we've got a listener who is building a really beautiful vacation rental, it's epic, it's one, it's sizable. Or they've got, like, we just interviewed someone who has 3 A-frames and someday they would love to outsource management to someone else. What should a homeowner who has their property managed by a management company, I mean, is there anything, not bad, but like anything that should concern them about their contracts being assignable? Like, or is it usually when there's an acquisition and another company comes in to buy that these homeowners know that their homes are going to be cared for and everything's going to be in good hands? Like, how can we look at this from both sides so that everyone can get all the education they need to make sure that they're, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a good point.
Yeah, no, I think that's a super fair question. Let's see. So the majority of contracts are assignable typically in a lot of industries. If you're a homeowner that has that worry, I would read the details and fight for that. Okay. And say, hey, this is something that I want to be the decision maker of who, if you sell, who my next management company is. The other thing that is that makes sense is that these management contracts, yeah, they're like 1 to 3 year terms and they auto renew and auto assign and all that stuff. But like, they're still, most of them are able to be canceled by the homeowner with a 30 to 90 day notice.
Okay.
And yeah, they might lose their advanced reservations on the thing, but like, they're not like that ironclad of contracts anyways.
And that would be normal, right? Like the 30, 69 days out. If like a buyer who's buying a contract from a property management company, those outs for the owners, that's standard for them to be in there still. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So that, if it's one of those things, like if a homeowner doesn't want a company to manage their home, then they're not aligned,
right?
The company and the homeowner, and they're going to get out of it. It's not there. There's very few instances, and that's typically just a badly run company, and they won't be around for a long time. And, but yeah, so I guess two things is, yeah, if that's super important to you, read the details and keep that clause in there if you're going to be the homeowner. Otherwise, it's also not terribly tough to get out of that contract.
No, that's great, because I think we have a lot of people that listen to our show, and they're like, after they listen to the show, they're like, holy smokes,
I'm going to get someone to manage my stuff.
I'm going to hire a management company. And I think this is really good knowledge for them, because they might not even be thinking everything that you just said. Like, vacation rentals are crushing it right now, and there might be someone that their management company might be working on an exit strategy, and they're not aware of it at all. So I think this is really great education for our listeners that, like, that could potentially at some point in time happen to them. And so if they ask the right questions, or just be prepared to maybe do an interview with the new group if they take over, so they understand, like you said, if there's still alignment there. But at the end of the day, they own the property, and they're going to be able to most likely cancel the contract at some point in time.
Yeah. And bigger obviously is not always better. But typically, if someone's going to buy, if you're a homeowner and someone's going to buy your management company, the management company that you use, then they're likely going to have more capital that they throw at revenue management practices and marketing practices, and not always staffing, but but likely they would be able to use more technologies to potentially get you more income if that's the only thing you care about. Even though I know that for homeowners it differs a lot based on what market you're at, whether cash is important or care is important or communication.
Right. They should just be able to deploy more resources. Whichever,
it could be a great thing.
Yes. Right.
Your management company getting bought out or sold, strategically is. I mean, yeah, what you've seen, Jacoby, is it usually like a good thing? Like that's more often than not, the company coming in and buying has more resources to improve.
I would say more often than not, yes. I'm not going to lie. There are, the industry is moving super fast. There's been companies that try to grow too quick or whatnot. There's a million reasons. So there are times where it's not done perfect. I feel like the more a company does, or the more time and effort they put towards focusing on the particular purchase that ends up going well.
I have a question, because I would think it would be important, but I want to hear it from your perspective. How important for the management company is it that they have a past customer list of all their past days? People, like, is that any leverage there of like, hey, I have an email list of 50,000 people that have stayed in our properties locally, and is that of any value to the buyer?
Yeah. I think for sure that is of value. Now, is it like quantitatively seen in an offer? Not typically. Like it's not likely going to be raising a purchase price or anything of that nature. Mm-hmm. But they understand that you've built these relationships over the years. You've built this brand loyalty and trust. And they're going to use that post-acquisition to continue on their email campaigns and their guests, all that stuff. Yeah, that's definitely looked into for sure. We have, going back, sorry, I did remember, going back with where we have had some, or buyers have had some mess ups is they didn't do enough diligence when looking at the homes they were, the contracts they were purchasing. They actually acquired some of the homeowners that used to be on their program and left and went on another program.
Oh no.
That is one of the cases where the homeowners elected to use their 30-day out quite quickly.
They're like, no, that's interesting. Yeah. That's funny.
But makes sense.
I'm sure it was not fun for the buyer or the seller at that moment.
That awkward conversation. Oh, you again.
Oh, we have to break up again. I thought I already did this.
What's important to a buyer in terms of the seller's staff?
Sure. And as y'all know, like, staff is the lifeblood of the hospitality industry.
Yes.
it's tough, and especially today we're in a tough environment for hospitality staffing. So having a staff is super important. I know that's for most industries, but in terms of the owner of the company, remove yourself from the owner relations role. If you enjoy doing biz dev and bringing on new homeowners, that's great. You can keep doing that. But once the homeowners are actually on board and in your portfolio, you do not need to be the communication liaison between the homeowners on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis. You need to either hire an owner relations person or cross-train some more people on your staff to be that day-to-day communication with the homeowners. You do not want to be the brand, the face of your company to the homeowners. You might think that that's great and loyal and all of that stuff, but that's the exact reasons why a buyer will be weary of you leaving the company, because they're going to be scared. Like I said, management contracts can be quite fickle and can be canceled pretty easily. So they're going to be scared that if you leave on day one after the transition, then 10 homeowners might leave as well. And they thought they were buying 30 contracts and they're only buying 20, something of that nature. So if you are the face to the homeowners, then a buyer will likely put contingencies on the deal, like unit declination. If like X amount of units are lost within the first 6 months, then your payout is reduced by X amount and stuff of that nature. Or they'll make you stay on for a longer period of time post close. So
that's fascinating.
How do you, I mean, Jacob, I don't know, just with your experience and seeing a lot of these things happen, how does a smaller company do that successfully? Like, if they've got 30, 40, 50 properties, you're still relatively a pretty intimate operation with your staff and your owners. I mean, other than trying to train your owners, that's what I'm trying to do right now, is like train them to reach out to this email address because our whole team has their eyes on this. If you text me, you know, on a Saturday when I'm trying to, I don't know, play frisbee with my dogs. Like, it's, you know, and that is as a operator, smaller operator, you think you're giving this great service. You're always available. I mean, that's that whole, it's, I don't know, like, you think that that's that level of service that you want to give, but not only does it help you with your bandwidth and your, and protecting your time, but you're telling me it might affect my bottom line if I ever want to sell as we grow. But any other tips that you've seen work well in terms of helping smaller operators do that?
Yeah, that's tough. That's, I mean, when I had the restaurant, like, it's hard to remove yourself from some of that. Like, I would be so intimately involved with some of my regulars and customers.
Yeah.
Like, a text message away constantly, and you feel that need.
Change the special tonight, damn yeah. it. This isn't the soup of the day.
Where's my special vodka? Yeah.
Oh, so much.
This
so
bartender
much.
Isn't making it stiffer.
Oh, your new bartender's terrible.
Yeah. Sorry, I could just...
No, we worked in food and beverage
like,
for years.
Okay. I want to text the owner. Wait, I'm waiting for a table? This is BS. Why aren't my bar stools ready?
Yep, you're giving me PTSD from that. what I would say is, and I understand the majority of management companies in the US, and I believe there's around like 20,000 of them or host, are small and medium businesses, and they're going to be less than 25 units under management. So I understand completely that most of the time they're not going to have the capital to hire a biz dev, have the capital to hire a general manager, have the capital to hire a revenue manager, and have the capital to hire an owner relations person. Where that, what you do to get by at the smaller time is cross train. You have to start introducing your homeowners to other people at your company, and whether by email, by phone, but do it at the same time. Both of y'all, you and whatever person that you think you're kind of grooming, take them with you to the homeowner's house or get on a call together and say, I want to introduce you to Molly. She's fantastic. She's going to be maybe around a little bit more than me. However you want to communicate that plan, that's kind of a way to get around it. But eventually you do have to start investing in dedicated employees if you kind of have a goal to grow past a certain threshold.
Have you seen a sweet spot in terms of, I mean, what if a listener, you know, they're at 10 properties right now, 15 properties, and they'll be at 20 by the end of, you know, this year, and they hear this episode like, that sounds amazing. Get me in and out of this. I'm going to build something real quick, build it strong, get out. What's that shortest time frame an owner, a property manager or a homeowner who builds a real estate portfolio is there, and do buyers care about how long it's been, you know, operating for?
Not really. I don't think it's going to matter as much. There is something to say about brands. For sure, brands are important. And there are some of those legacy brands, not as much in the urban areas, but in the resort and leisure areas. They're like multi-generational. Mm-hmm. They've been around since the 80s. The like grandkids are now running them. They have their multi-generational homeowners on the program, multi-generational guests traveling. I think those can get a higher premium that a buyer might pay because there is so much brand recognition and loyalty built up over 30 years. But if it's a 2-year company compared to a 5-year company or a 7-year company, a buyer's not going to care too much how long it's been. And going back, let's say it's 10 units that a host might be managing, that's typically not going to be a larger buyer, a national buyer. That'll more likely be another person in market or in the region.
Right.
And so a lot of that can, and I like to kind of push management companies or hosts to create a once a month lunch or dinner outing with all the other hosts in your market. And y'all go and share best practices, vent about crazy stuff that happened, crazy guests and stuff of that nature, and build those relationships, because that time may come where either you're ready to move on or one of your competitors might be ready to move on. If you already have that rapport, then you can kind of work through some of these things that an outside buyer won't know as much. Mm. And so that's something I would really push, especially some of the smaller companies to start creating those rapports, because that's likely who's going to be the buyers of you at some point in the future.
That's great advice. Mm-hmm. And as you were talking, I was thinking too, these, you know, you might have some, Sarah and I, we have it in our market where they are really on a hyper growth trajectory. And that might be their goal, is to have more of a national buyer come in and buy them. And that's interesting to think that they might want to absorb a smaller host just because they want to kind of beef up their numbers to then in turn get that buyer to be more interested in the market. So I think you're just really getting our minds and wheels spinning about, you know, the angles that people want to, that might,
yeah,
that they want to take to increase their revenue. So I love that idea. I think Jacoby just gave everybody a great idea there on meet up with hosts. Like Sarah and I just met up with a host last week, and that was, we're not working a deal with him, but we're like, hey, if people come to us and the property, we're not interested in it, we'd like to hand it over to someone else, you know? And it's what Sarah and I, our mission is to kind of like up-level hosting overall. So if you can actually know those other hosts in your area and
that you know, like, trust, like that you like what they're doing
and you know what their operation's about, you can even, at least if someone's interested in getting started in it, mm-hmm. whether it's their property or a job or anything like that, you at least have that network ready, then you can actually kind of, you know, hold their hand and place them in other good hands.
Jacoby, question. Let's say someone like wants to sell because they're just tired of wearing all the hats, but they don't want to let go. Is there any creative way other than selling their company and then being an employee of the new management team? Is there any other option there for the operator?
Yeah. There's always creative options. We actually just completed a deal, but we've seen where buyers will buy into the company. So they might either buy a majority of the company or a minority of the company. And that can be seen kind of as like an acqui-hire as well. You're acquiring a company, but you really are more interested in maybe the staff or one of the staff members of the company. And
acqui-hire. I like that.
I just learned that word. Thank you. I'm like, man. I feel smarter today after I...
We're going to use that word every day for the next week.
I've never heard that. Interesting. Okay. So they'll acquire the company and then hire the team, continue with that team.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes an owner might be amazing at homeowner growth, at business development. They're great at heading out and doing the conversations with the homeowners and sourcing new deals, but they are terrible at operations, or they're just worn out from the operations side. So yeah, so a buyer and that's, like I said, someone in market is usually even a better play there, because you know each other a little bit more. If someone is really strong with ops, but they're not great at growth, then you can say, hey, let's figure out a way that you acquire my company or 30% of my company or 60%, and then you already have the infrastructure of ops in place, and then I'll be the VP of biz dev or whatever. I'll focus solely on bringing in new inventory. And we see that all the time for sure, because we all have strengths and weaknesses, and nobody is A plus at every job out there.
No matter how much I try.
Go ahead.
So good.
I just love that hosts, if you're out there, normally you get bit by the bug and you want to host more properties.
Yeah.
So I think Jacoby is giving us a lot of food for thought of, maybe if you can't do it on your own, if the biz dev isn't where you know your sweet spot, maybe you partner up with another operator in your mm-hmm. town, and you know you can merge together or work something out. So I just think there's
so many ways,
so much opportunity to strike up deals all over the place that work. You know, so people are working on their strengths. There's
okay, I have 1 million questions, but we have to let Jacoby go because we've taken
We don't up, have 1 million hours.
We don't. But if people wanted to reach out to you, Jacoby, and chat more about working with you or what it's like to do what you do or anything at all related to our discussion today, can they and how should they?
Yeah, sure. So would love to talk to anyone about anything. I love the industry. As I said, I was born and raised in this crazy industry. Feel free to email me. It's my first name, Jacoby, which is Jacob with an IE at the end, at c2gadvisors.com. Feel free to go to our website, c2gadvisors.com, or LinkedIn, message me or whatnot. Love to chat some more.
We'll put this in the link. But by the way, when he's saying C2, it is the number 2, not spelled out. So C number 2, G Advisors.
Yes.
We'll put that in the show notes.
And anything else before I cut you off, I just want to make sure you know, he's a busy guy, listeners, but anything else that you want to leave our listeners with before we sign off for the day?
No, I appreciate you having me on. We're, like I said earlier, I feel like we're in the early innings of this super unique industry. And I think we have a lot of tailwinds going on. Mm. I'm very bullish on what the next 3 to 5 years are going to bring. And every day we see a new entrepreneur creating some new cool niche in this industry. So anyone listening, jump in with both feet. It's really fun. It can get kind of crazy, but
but mostly fun.
Worth it. Awesome. That's great advice.
Awesome, Jacoby. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing all of your expertise. I am Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for this episode at thanksforvisiting.me. If you're looking to take your listing to the next level and show your guests how much you care, be sure to check out our line of thoughtful hosting products. From hosting checklists to custom mugs to toilet paper stickers, we've got you covered. And if you love our show, remember, sharing is caring. Please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Thanks for visiting.
Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.